For nearly 40 years, travelers along Route 16 near Fayetteville, West Virginia, were met with a billboard featuring blurry photos of five children. Each child had dark hair and solemn eyes. Below the images were their names and ages. Maurice, 14, Martha, 12, Louis, 9, Jenny, 8, and Betty, 5. Accompanying their names was speculation about their fate. Fayetteville, a small town with a main street barely 100 yards long, was steeped in rumors regarding the case, with speculation often outweighing concrete evidence. There was even disagreement about whether the children were actually dead. With this episode of Still Unsolved, we hope to find answers. This is the case of the Sodder family. In the 1940s, George and Jenny Sodder left Italy for Fayetteville, a quaint town in West Virginia, accompanied by their 9 children, soon to become 10. They happily settled into their new life. By 1945, George was busy managing his trucking business, which he co-owned with a partner alongside 2 of his sons. While things were starting to look promising, their fates would quickly change, for that year brought a series of unsettling events for the Sodder family. First, a stranger approached George at their home, inquiring about work opportunities, either around the house or within the company. When George explained there were no openings, the stranger made it a point to note the recent upgrades done on the exterior fuse box. He warned George of potential fire hazards. Later in the same year, an insurance salesman visited the Sodder household. George declined to purchase a policy, which infuriated the salesman. He ominously predicted that the Sodder residence would go up in flames and that there would be dire consequences for their children. George's outspoken criticism of the recently deceased Italian dictator, Benito Mussolini, might have fueled the salesman's rage. As the year drew to a close, Jenny and some of the children observed a mysterious individual parked outside their home while the kids returned from school. This person airily remained in their car, watching the house and never interacting with the children. Adding to the family's unease, Jenny encountered a woman accompanied by 3 men who were asking to see her infant children. It is not known if Jenny let the strangers inside her house. On Christmas Eve in 1945, John and George Jr. concluded their day's work with their father and retired to bed shortly after dinner. It's believed that the upstairs of the Sodder residence was divided into 2 bedrooms, one for the girls and one for the boys, while George and Jenny had a bedroom downstairs. Marion, having also worked that day, brought home gifts for her younger siblings, which they eagerly opened after dinner. Another sibling, Joe, was away fighting in the war and was not present. At 10 p.m., Jenny initially instructed the children to go to bed, but later relented, allowing them to stay up longer if they completed their nightly chores. Along with her husband and 2.5-year-old Sylvia, Jenny retired to bed. A little past midnight, Jenny was awakened by the ringing of the phone in George's office. Upon answering, she encountered a woman whose voice she couldn't place, asking for a man she didn't know. Laughter and revelry in the background added to the mysterious call. After the conversation ended abruptly, Jenny discovered Marion asleep on the couch and noticed the undone tasks. The shades were still up, the front door unlocked, and the lights remained on. Rectifying these, she secured the house before returning to bed once more. Jenny was jolted awake once again, this time by a thud on the roof, followed by the sound of a ball rolling off to the side of the house. Curiously, it later came to light that a witness had claimed to see balls of fire being hurled onto the roof. Approximately 45 minutes later, Jenny detected the unmistakable scent of smoke. If you remember, George received a visit from a mysterious man, an insurance salesman who gave George an ominous warning. Somehow, that warning came to fruition. The Sodder family home was now on fire. Attempting to reach the phone in George's office, Jenny found her path obstructed by flames. Urgently, she called out to George, rousing Marion from her slumber on the couch and instructing her to evacuate with Sylvia. Meanwhile, Jenny shouted upstairs to alert the other children. The eldest siblings rushed downstairs, their hair singed from the heat. Initially, John informed the authorities that he had entered the bedrooms to awaken his younger siblings. However, in a subsequent statement, he claimed to have merely yelled for them, believing he heard responses. This discrepancy raises questions, since Maurice and Louis both shared a room with John, so why wasn't he already with them? Desperate to save his kids, George shattered a window and even tried scaling the side of the house with his bare hands. The ladder that was typically kept nearby was mysteriously absent. It was later discovered down an embankment nearby, raising even more questions. Strangely, neither of the trucks on the property would start, despite them functioning perfectly fine earlier that day. Marion hurried to a neighbor's house in an attempt to call for assistance, but encountered difficulty connecting to the operator. During the 1940s, many telephones lacked dials, requiring users to rely on operators to establish connections. Additionally, numerous households, including the Sauter residence, shared party lines, where multiple homes utilized the same phone line for both incoming and outgoing calls. At around 1 a.m., another neighbor spotted the flames and attempted to contact the police from a nearby bar. The neighbor faced the same issue with the operator. Frustrated, he drove 2 miles to the fire chief's residence to get him. However, the fire chief was unable to drive a fire truck for some reason and had to recruit other firefighters to respond. As neighbors gathered to offer assistance, it became evident that 5 of the Sauter children remained unaccounted for. Oddly, no one reported hearing or seeing the children within the burning house, nor did they detect the scent of burning flesh. Throughout the approximately 30-minute duration of the fire, a man was observed stealing a car from the Sauter's garage. Although he was apprehended and charged with grand larceny, he was never investigated in connection with the fire. Another account mentioned a group of men supposedly taking a taxi from a bar to the scene of the fire. Neither the cab nor its driver could be identified, casting doubt on the validity of this claim. Additionally, a woman outside reported seeing at least one of the Sauter children peering out of a car window, bearing Florida license plates as it drove past. However, despite this potential sighting, she refused to testify. Firefighters didn't arrive until Christmas Day, 6 hours after the fire ignited. Following the extinguishing of the flames, they meticulously combed through the ashes and debris, yet uncovered no trace of the 5 missing children: Maurice, Martha, Louise, Jenny, and Betty. Nonetheless, the fire chief suggested to George that he gather some of the ashes as a memorial for them. After the firefighters and police departed, promising a return for further investigation, a hasty coroner's report concluded that the fire resulted from an accidental electrical malfunction. Alarmingly, it later emerged that the insurance salesman who had pressured George to purchase a policy sat on the jury. Despite Trooper Springer's assertion that the collapse of the chimneys would have obliterated any remains, police deemed the fire electrical in origin. With the family now residing in a smaller structure on the property, George bulldozed the fire site a few days later, concealing a sizable hole where the basement once stood. He and Jenny resolved to transform the area into a garden in memory of their presumed deceased children. In the aftermath of the tragedy, numerous rumors and inaccuracies circulated in local news articles and gossip, putting the family through further anguish. On December 30th, death certificates were issued for all 5 children and a memorial service took place. Strangely, it's rumored that George and Jenny did not attend. Notably, these death certificates were signed by an assistant, prompting doubts regarding the thoroughness of any medical examination. And with all of that, the case was officially closed. But this decision would be challenged by even more strange occurrences. In January, a telephone technician arrived to install service in the outbuilding where the Sauters had chosen to reside. To his surprise, he found that the phone line had not been damaged by the fire. Rather, it had been deliberately severed. The individual who had confessed to pilfering from the garage admitted to cutting the phone line, claiming he mistook it for an electrical wire. Nevertheless, authorities never pursued him in connection with the fire. Growing increasingly suspicious of the official verdict, George and Jenny recalled seeing lights on and Christmas decorations illuminated inside the house as they fled. This conflicted with the notion that the fire originated at the electrical box, which would have immediately cut off the lights. Consequently, they embarked on their own investigative endeavors. Jenny conducted experiments, burning chicken and pig bones in a bowl. Her theory was proven when she found them intact and recognizable after the fire died down. Additionally, she came across a newspaper article detailing a house fire where all seven occupants perished, yet their bodies were recovered. Moreover, their daughter Sylvia stumbled upon a military incendiary device while playing outside, possibly explaining the thud and the witness's account of balls of fire. Faced with mounting doubts, George and Jenny began to suspect that their children had been taken from the house prior to the blaze. However, authorities insisted they accept the official conclusion. Undeterred, they financed their own investigation by hiring private detectives. Eventually, two witnesses emerged, claiming to have seen the children after their disappearance. One alleged encounter occurred at a truck stop, where a woman recounted serving breakfast to the children on Christmas morning in the company of unidentified adults. The other witness described observing four of the children with two men and two women at her hotel. Despite her attempts to engage with the children, the adults remained silent, exchanging words only in Italian while casting menacing glares. Notably, these accounts remain unverified. In 1947, a clergyman disclosed to George that the fire chief had supposedly discovered a human heart amid the debris, but opted not to divulge this information to spare the Sodders further distress. Allegedly, the heart was interred in a box on the property, with the fire chief initially reluctant to disclose its location, presumably fearing it would prematurely conclude their investigation. However, he eventually relented, leading to the heart's retrieval. Subsequent analysis revealed it to be a portion of a cow's liver, untouched by fire. Unfortunately, this crucial piece of evidence has since gone missing or has been destroyed. The FBI declined to intervene, deeming the case within local jurisdiction, although they briefly explored the possibility of kidnapping. In 1948, Jenny confided to a reporter her belief that it would have been feasible for an intruder to use the ladder to access the upstairs bedrooms, coerce the children out, and then discard the ladder down an embankment. The following year, George and Jenny enlisted the expertise of an independent pathologist to conduct a comprehensive examination of the fire site, including the ashes and debris. During this investigation, four spinal vertebrae were discovered. However, analysis determined that these vertebrae had been intentionally severed from a spinal column and placed there after the fire. It was deemed unrelated to the Sodder family, and no other skeletal remains were recovered. Simultaneously, the private investigators hired by George and Jenny officially closed the case, likely due to encountering numerous dead ends, and ultimately accepting the official ruling. Approximately 5 weeks later, Troy Simmons from the West Virginia Merchant Police assumed control of the investigation. He theorized that the children had fallen victim to a grudge murder, suggestive of organized crime. He also speculated that they had not been taken beyond the county's borders. Shortly thereafter, Simmons received a letter asserting that the four vertebrae had originated from a Mount Hope graveyard and might have been transported to the house by an unidentified taxi driver on the night of the fire. The letter's author urged Simmons to consider the possibility that the children had been fatally struck on the head and removed from the premises via a ladder, an assertion that appeared overly specific and improbable. In 1950, Simmons posited that a conspiracy involving five individuals was behind the alleged kidnapping, yet subsequent progress in the case stagnated. Consequently, in 1952, George and Jenny placed an ad appealing to anyone with information regarding the children's whereabouts to come forward. Then, on September 13, 1953, a sizable billboard featuring photographs of the missing children and offering a $5,000 reward was erected on the road adjacent to the Sauter residence. Just 2 days prior to this, George and Jenny conveyed to the Beckley Post-Herald their willingness to waive charges or sign any kind of release pertaining to the kidnapping in exchange for the safe return of their children. Despite their persistent efforts, the Sauters faced continued disappointment when both the West Virginia governor and the state police superintendent declined to reopen the investigation. In February of 1952, the FBI concluded its inquiry, asserting that there was insufficient evidence to suggest the children had survived the fire. The Cremation Association stated that it typically takes around 2 hours, at temperatures ranging from 1400 to 2000 degrees Fahrenheit, for a body to fully incinerate and leave behind bone fragments. Contrastingly, the National Institute of Fire and Safety Training indicated that the average house fire reaches temperatures of about 1100 degrees. Therefore, if the children had perished in the fire, or were present in the home at the time, some remains should have been found. Despite these findings, reported sightings of the missing children surfaced from various locations across the United States, prompting George and Jenny to pursue each lead diligently. They even ventured to states along the eastern coast to investigate potential sightings. Then, in 1967, Jenny received an anonymous letter from Central City, Kentucky. The letter contained a photograph of a man appearing to be roughly 31 years old, the same age Louis would have been. The message on the back even contained the name Louis Sauter. Presenting the photo to the West Virginia Attorney General, the Sauters hoped for assistance, but the office remained unconvinced of its authenticity and declined further investigation. The Sauters hired a private investigator to probe the matter in Central City, only to be swindled out of their money as the investigator vanished without a trace. By the conclusion of 1968, 23 years had elapsed since the tragic fire. George speculated in an interview that the missing children may have been shown a photograph of their charred former home and falsely informed that the rest of their family perished in the fire, thereby dissuading them from returning. In 1970, a local television program aired titled "The Saddest Christmas Story Ever Told." Sadly, it failed to yield any significant leads. John Sauter expressed his belief that the children had been abducted and taken to Italy, a theory seemingly predicated solely on the assertion of a hotel owner. In 1976, a news article reported that the billboard prominently featuring images of the missing children had been riddled with bullets. Jenny disclosed that individuals had been firing at the billboard for years. In fact, she herself had been targeted. Although she reported the incident to the authorities, no further action was taken. Presently, no records remain pertaining to the case. There's no coroner's reports, no police department files, no FBI documents, no fire department records. And despite decades of search efforts, there's still no trace of the missing Sauter children. With the passing of George and Jenny, their surviving children and grandchildren continued the tireless pursuit for answers regarding the fate of the missing Sauter siblings. About 3 years ago, Sylvia Sauter, the youngest of the Sauter brood, passed away at 79 years old. A mere toddler of two at the time of the fire, Sylvia was persistent in her relentless search for her vanished siblings. Like the rest of the family, she was firm in her conviction that Maurice, Martha, Louise, Jenny, and Betty were abducted that fateful evening. Regrettably, even to this day, the ultimate fate of the five Sauter children remains still an unsolved mystery.